בוקר טוב, בוקר טוב. This morning, Yom HaZikaron לחללי צה"ל ופעולות איבה. So somebody took an initiative, believe me, I don't even know who, but it's been going around the cell phones. People were sent one name of a particular individual of the 23,500 who fell from the beginning of the 20th century when we had a civil defense called Hashomer, and all the way through the Haganah and the Irgun, the Etzel, and then of course Tzahal, and Lo Aleinu, various Piguim that didn't start in 1948. And Piguim, I think people in the United Nations should be reminded, was not a West Bank Yehuda v'Shomron issue. We unfortunately buried quite a few people way before Yehuda v'Shomron and Ramat HaGolan became a political issue. So that's not the issue, but so what was sent was a name, and for people to say a Perek Tehillim, which they divided, and a name, and they gave one Mishnah, which they divided. And the idea was to go through all of Tehillim this morning, and to go through all of Shas this morning of Mishnayot, Lezecha HaNoflim, and my wife received for Tehillim, Kuf Lamed Gimel, a name who actually we knew, Roy Klein, Shem Yikom Damo, who fell in the Second Lebanese War in a most heroic fashion, basically saving many, many others, and sacrificed his life. I think he was from the Yishuv Eli, if I'm not mistaken, and then became a bill of political football because there were some border issues there that the house that they were living in, the government wanted to take down, and his almana was living there with the kids. It was a messy situation. And I received for Mishnah study Nadav Milo, who fell in 1997. I don't have the all the circumstance. Nadav Ben Avraham, who Bridget, okay, I don't know if he's from France. It sounds like a French fellow. He fell in 97 in some type of military action or pigua. And the Mishnah was from Pirkei Avot. So let me just read the Mishnah from the third parak, the end of the second parak, rather. And that's why we have telephones, so we have the whole Mishnayot, right? In case you were wondering what I'm doing, I'm dialing a Mishnah. Well, they used to have these things called dial-a-daf, remember? But that's passé, you know, they don't dial-a-daf anymore. You just bring it up on the phone, you know, your whole Schottenstein and your whole Kahati, and it's amazing. It's amazing, because I remember we were learning many years ago that there's a tradition that after 120 years, the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives everybody a test, a b'china, a mifchan, of what you study. I'm planning to bring my disc on key. That's all. It's as simple as that. Anything I know is not the disc on key. That's it. All my source sheets. So the Mishnah says, and after the Mishnah had already recited, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a pivotal, pivotal personality at the time of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, and to a large extent is responsible for the survival of Torah after the Churban, Ten li Yavne v'chachameha. So the Mishnah records that he had five prime students. He had many students, but five prime students. And he enumerates each one and the virtues of each particular one. Some of the Parshanim claim that if you want to know who was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he was all of the above. Like if you, or all of the below. You just read about his five students, what he's talking about. So he's basically saying that I saw in myself this virtue and this virtue and that virtue. And he was really saying something about himself. And there's no question that he was what a pivotal, pivotal personality in the history of Tashua Peh. So the first of the five is Rabbi Lezer ben Hyrcanus, who's one of the two who it said about them that if the other four would be on the scale and he would be on the other side, he would tip the scale, at least balance the scale. So one was Rabbi Lezer ben Hyrcanus, the other one was Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, and the difference was each one had a different level of excellence, or a different category of excellence. Blaise ben Hyrcanus was, says, Bor sud sheino ma'abe tipa. That's like a water pit that there's no cracks, no water can seep through. And it basically means an unbelievable memory. You know, some of us are gifted with good memories. Some of us, once upon a time, we had good memories. But slowly but surely, we don't win. Now it has cracks. Right, now it has cracks. Bid you. But you don't have to feel bad. It happens to all of us, that's all. So, you know, where did I put the keys? You know, stuff, that kind of stuff. Beside so, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus said, they all said three things. If you're familiar with Pirkei Avot, somehow everybody said three things. But they obviously had a lot more than three things. But these are like really sayings that were constantly repeated, and they lived by these credos and so on. So they said three things. Rabbi Elazar said, one, Yihi chvod chavercha chaviv alecha kishalach. You should remember that the dignity of your chaver should be as dear to you as your own. Some people are very, you know, careful about their own kavod. Right? Remember, there was a 1979. There was a parody on the Jewish press called Not the Jewish Press. It was printed by Talmidim of Yeshiva University. It was so good that the Jewish press went to court and sued them. But I mean, you know, you can't take a joke on Purim Bemet. The line, Yihi chvod chavercha, the honor of your friend, the dignity of a friend, chaviv alecha, should be as dear to you, kishalach, as you cherish yourself. So the assumption is that people do cherish themselves and do think highly of themselves. The word chaver in modern Hebrew means a friend, right? An acquaintance, not a stranger. The opposite of a stranger is a chaver. In the lexicon of Chazal, chaver means a Talmud Chacham. That's what it means. You know, we use it in the context of a yeshiva, a chavruta. So chavruta in Aramaic means a chaver. And as opposed to a Talmid Chacham who receives smicha, so he's a Rav, so a Chaver is a Talmid Chacham who for whatever reason did not attain smicha. So he's called a Chaver. And it's interesting that in certain areas, everybody has the status of a Chaver, even though he or she may not be a Chaver, objectively speaking. Remember we said on Birkat HaChodesh, Chaverim Kol Yisrael. What does that mean? We're all good buddies? I got news for you. That's not always the case. What does it mean? So the Rav Zichron Levracha once said that you ever notice that by Birkat HaChodesh, the Chazan holds the Sefer Torah when he announces the Chodesh, right? That's generally explained that that we don't have a Beit Din, and somehow to reenact something of the Beit Din, you want the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Elokim nitzav be'adat mishpat. Be'adat keil. The idea that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is present in the presence of the judiciary, which, I'm just digressing for a second, that's why the Dayanim would have to wear a talus. Because the talus means there's a presence of Shechina, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So what we try to do is use the Sefer Torah as a type of symbol that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is here at the moment that we're remembering that the Beit Din is supposed to announce the Rosh Chodesh. So the Chazan holds the Sefer Torah in a symbolic gesture. But do you ever notice when the Chazan actually takes the Sefer Torah? And in the Siddurim it says exactly, he takes it before Misha Asan Nisim Lavotenu. You should take it right after he says Chavirim Kol Yisrael V'nomar Amen, then take the Sefer Torah and say Rosh Chodesh Iyar Yeh B'yom Rishon V'yom Sheni. That's what he should have done. But no, that's not what's done. What's done is he takes it from Mishal San Nisim Lavotenu. And the Rav said the reason why he does so, in order to honestly say Chavirim Kol Yisrael, there's only one item, one object that has the power of unifying all of Klal Yisrael. It's the Sefer Torah. And that's why he holds the Sefer Torah. And even though some are more learned, some are less learned, but when it comes to the idea that we connect to Sefer Torah, it has nothing to do with intellectual abilities or accomplishment. It simply has to do with connection. And on that score, Chaverim Kol Yisrael. Every Jew is connected. Every Jew is a Chaver, a type of Ben Torah, in the sense that yes, we believe, we are connected, we are in favor, and therefore, not to make a lie out of the saying, Chaverim Kol Yisrael, the Chazan holds the Sefer Torah, and so on. I remember saying this once in Ramot, there was a gentleman who had a Sefer Torah given, the shul, they made a ceremony with his family, and around the table, the sudat mitzvah, you know, every family has, you know, their non-religious uncle or brother-in-law or whatever, and every family of our persuasion has their Haredi wing as well. Around the table was sitting the spectrum of what you consider Am Yisrael today, really, not just the religious community. There were all kinds of kippot, as Rabbi Levine would say, black kippot, knitted kippot, and transparent kippot. That's what he said. Every Jew has a kippah. Just some, you just don't see, because, you know, it's a shkufa. He said kippah shkora, kippah sruga, and kippah shkufa. So transparent, that's all. But everybody has their kippah. And there they were sitting around the table, celebrating the completion of the writing of a Sefer Torah. And I said this part. I said, take a look what's going on here. I said, if we wouldn't be here for a Sudat Mitzvah, for a Sefer Torah, half the people here would be at each other's necks. And maybe not physically, but certainly verbally, perhaps you know, in writing and emotionally. But now, you know, all the weapons are put on the side. And Chaverim Kol Yisrael. Chaverim Kol Yisrael. It's a tremendous, tremendous idea. So, it says, Rav Blezer Omer, Yichvot Chavercha, Chaviv Alecha Kishalach. A Chaver. Well, you know why this is important? Let's assume we would translate this into modern idiom. Your friend. So the word would be Yidid. Yidid. Yiditcha. Or Reya. Reya. Reyecha. That's already a friend, an acquaintance who you know, as opposed to a stranger. A Jew who's not a stranger, who is a stranger, by the way, who's not your, you know, best friend or your neighbor, he's called in the Torah, Achicha, your brother. That's what he's called. L'chol avidat Achicha. You don't have an idea who the man is, a woman, but you saw a name, you got in touch, you gave back the lost item, you fulfilled the mitzvah. L'chol avidat Achicha. So we use this today, by the way, young Israelis use this all the time, especially in the army. Achai, Achi, 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 my brother, Achi, Achi. Okay, it's biblical, by the way. Even if you don't know a fellow, you never met him before, achi, right? Bus drivers will use it, taxi drivers will use it. It's part of the lingo, it's part of the jargon of modern Hebrew, but it's actually biblical, achicha. Reya and yedid have the connotation of acquaintances. We call in English friends on some level. I remember once the Rav gave an interesting understanding of why Hebrew carries with it two different words. We're going to see this in the Seret HaDibrot, where it says, in the source number one, in Pasuk Yudalet on the right, it says, Lo tachmod beit reyecha, and Lo tachmod eshet reyecha. So the word reya, reish ayin, doesn't mean ra, bad. But it's interesting that the word reish ayin, bad, and reya, friend, same letters. And the Rav said something very interesting, very perceptive. He says, why does the Hebrew language carry two words to say it mean the same thing? Reya and Yedid. So obviously he said it's not the same thing. Just like Geshem and Matar is not the same thing, although translated as rain. So why sometimes in the Torah is it Geshem and sometimes it's Matar? And so too in Tfilah. Mashivaruch Mar Geshem and Betain Tal Umatar Libracha. I'm not going to deal with this now. I'm just pointing out that if biblical Hebrew uses two different words for the same phenomenon, it means that either they have to be understood on different planes, on different levels. And that's a speech in itself with regard to rain. With regard to friend, the Rav said, Reya is somebody who was your friend, indeed. The only thing is, potentially he can stab you in the back at a certain occasion because you crossed him, whatever. And the Rav proves this with a pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim. It says, "Ki yakum ish al re'ehu lehorgo be'orma me'im mizbechi tikachenu lamud." If your friend gets up and stabs you, so you have to. This is execution. "Ki yakum ish al re'ehu lehorgo be'orma." What do you mean, re'ehu? He's going to kill his friend? Yeah. Yesterday he was your friend. Today he's willing to stab you in the back. A yedid, the Rav said, And even if there's a fallout between the two individuals, they still remain friends. They still remain friends. A lot of times in the political arena, we've had some political skirmishes, let's say, with the United States, putting it mildly. But remember, the Prime Minister and the President, at least in their public stance, Anachnu Yedidim. Doesn't say, never say Anachnu Reyim. They say Anachnu Yedidim. It's true. In other words, the idea is that even though sometimes things go sour, they remain Yedidim. Sometimes in a marriage, it's very nice, except that sometimes it does sour. That's why in a marriage, they're not called Yedidim. They're called Reyim Ahuvim. The Reim Ovim. The after Reacha Kamocha is a level of connection, no doubt. It's Reya. In the certain Sifre Kodesh, like Shulchan Aruch, so if you get to, you have the letters indicating the number of chapter, right? Siman Aleph, Siman Beit, Siman Gimel, Siman Dalet. You get to Siman Resh Ayin, it says Siman Ayin Resh. Ayin Resh means air, means awake. Instead of evil, nobody's going to write, it's the, what simon are we? We're on simon ra. We don't want to say that. Right. It's all kinds of things, like shin mem dalet, shmad. That's not a good word. So it says shin dalet mem. Even we had this 1984, right? 1984? Yeah, Orwell, right? It was tafshin dalet mem, not tafshin mem dalet. And do you know that the year of Kristallnacht and... Actually, it was already, Kristallnacht was November 38, but it was the first shot of the Shoah, and then of course the war began in 39 in September. The Hebrew date was Tirzach. Tafresh Tzarechet. That's what it was. Yeah. Tafresh Tzarechet. Tirzach. Let's to take these things, who knows. So, Yichvot Chavercha. So the Rav said, Yedid is even if there's a fallout. And Chaver, the Rambam tells us in the Mishnah commentary to Pirkei Avot, where the Mishnah says, Aseh lecha Rav, ukne lecha Chaver. It doesn't mean get yourself a buddy. It means if you don't have a Rav, who's an official Talmud Chacham, known, respected, and so on, but at least there's what we call in Hebrew today a Yodea Sefer. Somebody who's not an ignoramus. He knows how to learn by himself. He might be a business person, whatever, but he's a professional. He's not a Rav, he's not functioning as a Rav, but he's a Talmud Chacham in his own right. So he's called a Chaver. And you know that in Europe, in Western Europe especially, not so much in Eastern Europe, there was a title that was given to Balabatim, people who exhibited exemplary service to Torah, sometimes a gabbai for 50 years, who most probably was learned. He was a learned individual. He wasn't the Rav in town, but they called him as an official title, a chaver. That was a title that was given, and we have people in Ol Nechama who actually carry that. We gave out one title. My 6-year tenure, we actually gave it out to somebody. It was a very moving ceremony. And my 20 years in Ramot, we gave it to somebody as well. An official ceremony, titling somebody to the name Chaver, which was a ceremony that was done in Europe, time of old. And we have several people in Olachama who, when they get an Aliyah, they themselves are just called up by their name, Pliny, whatever. But Ben HaChaver, they're very careful that their father received that title, so they're called up by that title, Chaver. There are some shuls in America that every shul member is called a Chaver, because in modern Hebrew, Chaver means a member of an organization, you're a Chaver. So if you were just a guest, you were called up by your name, but if you were a member, you were called up Chaver. But that's not what we do, we use the word Chaver only in its title. At Yeshiva University many years ago, Rabbi Norman Lamb, the then president of the Yeshiva, instituted for those fellows who wanted to continue sitting learning in the Kollel with no particular ambition to do a smicha program, at least when they leave should have some type of acknowledgement from the Yeshiva that they put in some extra time in learning. Whether it's going to help for the shidduch or not, that's totally irrelevant. That it was the yeshiva making a statement of acknowledgement, so they instituted the Chaver program. Basically borrowed from this name, Chaver, that they used in Europe to give special appreciation and acknowledgement and recognition to particular individuals who clearly were B'nai Torah. And that's what chaver. So aseh lecha rab, k'nei lecha chaver. So then Rambam says there are different types of relationships. The highest level is student to teacher, teacher to student, rab le talmid. This is the highest degree of chibur. So here it talks about yehi chvod chavercha chaviv alecha kishalach. The honor and dignity of that you think about yourself. So it's interesting that a person should have an opinion about himself or herself. There's nothing wrong with that. I remember when the Rebbe once spoke about humility, anava. So there are many statements in Pirkei Avot about the humility, and shows up in the Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu, Eish Moshe, anav mikol adam, asher apnei adama. He was the most humble individual that ever walked the face of the world. Now what does that mean? Does that mean that he considered himself, his self-esteem, his self-image, was afar ve'efer, he was the dust of the ground? Not at all, said the Rav. The Rav said that anava means a correct self-impression. Correct self-impression. He said not too high, not higher than, but also, and perhaps even more important, not lower than. Because he said if you have an impression that's lower than you shirk responsibility. Because there are things that have to be done. And we need capable people to do it. And you can just shy away and say, it's not for me, you know, you need great people. But if you happen to be a great person and you know it, then you better stand up and do what has to be done, because you're capable. And that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu granted you your talents, your abilities, gave you the good fortune of being educated in the way that you are, so that you're in a time and a place to do a job, to do a mission, fulfill a mission. So you can't just say, I'm nothing, you know, I'm a far ve'efer. That's not going to work. And, as happens to all too often, person thinks he's higher than his true self-image. So Rav said, anava means a correct self-image, and furthermore, not to call a press conference every Monday and Thursday to advertise it. Just keep it to yourself. Keep it to yourself, and simply, make those decisions on the basis of where you stand. And and then the Rav goes on further, and he says, Moshe Rabbeinu knew exactly who Moshe Rabbeinu was. And he said, Rabbi Akiva knew who Rabbi Akiva was. And the Rambam knew who the Rambam was. And I know who I am. This was something remarkable, because the Rav hardly spoke autobiographical. Very rare, off-the-cuff remark. And the truth is, he did know who he was. He knew how great he was. But he didn't announce it every morning, you know. Hey, yeah, I'm Rabbi Joseph Yisrael Beitzchuk. No. Didn't work like that. So he knew he had responsibility, which was really the core issue of why, when Rav Herzog passed away and Ben Gurion offered the Rav to be chief rabbi of Israel in 1959, he thought about it for a half a year. When ultimately he turns it down, it's not that it was a knee-jerk reaction. Nah, it's not for me. He thought it was for him. And he thought he could do a good job. And the whole issue in his mind for a half a year was, where does a Kadosh Baruch Hu need me most? That was really what was going on in his mind. Fact is, his uncle Rav Elvula was against it, and I spoke to the Rav about this, and he said, yeah, but that, he said that wasn't the critical issue. He was at Rav, his uncle was against it. Fine. But and he was very close to his uncle, who lived here in Yerushalayim. But that wasn't the critical. There were other issues. And he really thought out carefully where he was best serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu's interest. Would it be here as chief rabbi? Was it there, Boston, New York, that he was doing so well? He was in his prime. He was 56 years old and really, really in his prime. And he made a call, a judgment call. And it's the last thing in the world we're going to do is question it. He did what he did. And that was his decision. I would go further and say that he thought that decision should apply to his students as well. And when his own son-in-law, who was the crown prince at the yeshiva, and now is his yard site, by the way, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, this week is the first yard site, just a few days ago, was Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein's first yard site, I think it was on Monday, 2 days ago, his aliyah, and Rabbi Aaron was 38 years old, in his prime, or entering into his prime. He was really a top shear at YU. He was the head of the Kollel, and he was next in line, you know, the Rav's son-in-law, Talmud Muvak, with unquestioned. And he packs his bags in 1971 for what? For a lunch foot of 1971. Do you know what a lunch foot was in 1971? Two caravans was the yeshiva. Mm-hmm. It was not the empire, the mamlacha that you have today, the campus of Yeshiva HaTzion. There was a vision. That's what it was. And a year before his passing, which was just 2 years ago, on Yom HaTzmaut, I had the pleasure of going with my wife to Binyanei Oma. Believe me, I got tickets at the last minute. The last minute. And we sat in the last row, but who cares? Our great Rebbe, Rabbi Lichtenstein, one Pras Yisrael, he was very sick, and he had to be brought up to the stage with his father, with his son, Rav Moshe. But it was Medinat Yisrael's way of applauding his aliyah. It had nothing to do with the six svarim that had just recently come out. That was the excuse. You have to have an excuse to win Pras Yisrael. So he, Beseda, they got it through. But it was really Medinat Yisrael standing on its feet and applauding his decision to come on aliyah. That's the way I saw it. I spoke to people in the family. They agree. And the Rav had a different opinion about this. Yichvod chavercha chaviv alecha kishalach also has to do with the fact, specifically chaver, where a chaver, a Talmud Chacham, sometimes has a self-image, you know, sometimes a little bit inflated. I've dealt with this issue, and on the high school level, yeshiva high schools, where sometimes you get a fellow who was sitting in a yeshiva for many years and became a nice ben Torah, but the only position that's available for him is to teach 8th or 9th grade, where you don't really need, you know, seasoned Talmud. You need somebody who knows how to teach a page of Gemara. But he thinks that, you know, he's the assistant to Rabbi Kiva Eger, or to the Noda Behuda, or perhaps the Noda Behuda should have been his assistant. And they really have inflated egos, and they cannot get into the classroom of a 9th grade and recognize that these kids can't read a page of Gemara, and that's what your job is. That's the mandate. It's not to tell them all kinds of highfalutin halachic ideas that they're not there. What you're basically doing is drowning them in the Yam HaTalmud, in the sea. You have to know your crowd. And it's not so simple. So sometimes a chaver, a Talmud Chacham, can be a little bit overinflated. But at least consider that the next fellow is also up there. And you have to, you know, there has to be parity. And I say this dafke in the period of the Omer, because when the Gemara says in Masechet Yevamot, Daf Samach Bet, that 24,000 students, it says actually 12,000 pairs of Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva who perish between Pesach and Shavuot, which led to the certain customs of Avelut, of mourning during the days of the Omer. So the Gemara says, Shalom Nagu Kavod Zulazu, they didn't respect each other. These Talmidim didn't respect each other. And the Gemara says they died in a plague. And the truth is, I don't know if I mentioned this the other week, but in the letter of Rav Shrira Gaon, he's the father of the famous, more famous, Rav Hai Gaon. Hey, sometimes you have a father who's less famous than the son, it happens. Rav Hai Gaon was very famous, but his father, Rav Shrira Gaon, also a famous personality, he writes in a long-winded letter some history of the period of the Gaonim, but he goes back to the days of the Mishnah and the Gemara, and he says that these Talmidim were Chayalim, were soldiers of Bar Kokhba, and they were killed in the war. They fell in battle. Yom HaZikaron L'Chalalei Bar Kokhba. And the reason why the Gemara in the Talmud Bavli whitewashes it and said they perished in a plague, because they didn't want the Roman authorities to get their hands on such a source, because it was such a sore issue, the Bar Kokhba revolution, where the Roman army also took a battering. I mean, the bottom line is the Beit HaMikdash, the third Beit HaMikdash was not rebuilt, even though there were plans to build it. The third, the monarchy of Shimon Nasi Israel, of Shimon of Bar Kokhba, was quashed, was put down. All that was done, but the Roman army took a battering, and they didn't want to be reminded. Would not be a good idea to remind the Romans of the merit Bar Kokhba, and therefore they tell me that they died in a plague. But 1,000 years later, Rav Shrira Gaon is able to write the truth openly. He says they fell in the Bar Kokhba revolution. So the question is, why did it happen? What Chazal are really asking is the theological reason, why did Rabbi Akiva fail? If he thought that Bar Kokhba, Shimon Bar Kuziba, was Melech HaMashiach, why did it fail? So the answer, he said, what the Gemara says, Shelo Nagu Kavod Zelazeh. What brought down the second Beit HaMikdash? Sinat Chinam. The Jews didn't like each other. Why? For no reason. Not because the guy did me a job in business. No. For no reason. I don't like his skin color. I don't like the way he combs his hair. You know why? You don't even know why. It's just, as the kids here say, Stam. You know, Stam. Stam. What do you mean Stam? A Jew needs help. You're not willing to help. Why? Because you don't like the way he looks. What kind of business? You know, because his mother was born in Morocco and your mother was born in Hungary. What's the difference? It's a Jew. It's Am Yisrael. So that's what brought down the second Beit HaMikdash, Sinat Chinam. So Rabbi Akiva, 65 years later, had to evaluate, did we correct that situation? If the answer is yes, there's a chance. If the answer is no, there's no chance. If the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva cannot respect each other, these are like the next in line after Rabbi Akiva. Somebody's going to be the next Gadol HaDor there. What do you expect from the person on the street? These are the ones who are supposed to set the pace for correction in moral behavior and ethical actions. And if they can't do it, if they can't respect each other, there's no way that there's going to be a third Beit HaMikdash. And that's why it fails. Do you remember on Yom Kippur, after in Musaf, after the Kohen Gadol goes through the Avodah, that whole section called the Avodah, so then we have the very emotionally charged, you know, poem, Piyut, Eila Eskera, where we talk about the 10 martyrs, right? So who are the 10 martyrs? Rabbi Akiva and his Chaverim and his colleagues. But there were more than 10. So why does the poet write about 10? We repeat this in a different version on Tisha B'Av in the poem called Arzei Halvanon. But I'm referring now to the Eila Eskera. Because in the version of the Eila Eskera, it goes with a story. And the story is that a Roman general comes to, a Roman officer, he comes to the Beis Medrash and asks a Shaila. What's the Shaila? What's the halacha if somebody kidnaps another Jew and then has that Jew is sold off? So there's a pasuk in Chumash, V'gonev ishim choro v'nimtza biyado motamut, capital punishment offense. So the fellow, that's what they answered, this Roman. So the Roman officer says, well, remember back in Parshat Vayeshev, they sold Yosef, and Yosef was sold down the river to Mitzrayim. Did anybody ever pay, you know, from a judicial action? Did anybody stand trial? The 10 brothers, nobody stood trial. They were guilty. They didn't never paid for their crime. But you 10, here you see why the number 10 becomes important, why the poet picks 10 chachamim, because he needs 10 against 10. And the Medrash says that the Mechirat Yosef, the sale of Yosef, took place on the 10th of Tishrei, on Yom Kippur. So the number 10 is a very important factor in this poem. So he says, the Roman says, you know, since the days of the brothers of Yosef, there are none as great as you, and therefore you guys have to pay the price. So they ask for a few days to try to get in a word with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, with Ruach HaKodesh, and comes out the Bat Kol, Kablu Et Adin, it's an edict. There's no turning back. You have to accept this. And they accept their fate. And this is the story as it pans out, each one after the other. Do you think this story actually happened? If the Romans wanted to execute Rabbi Akiva, he needed a psak halacha about a posuk in Parshat Mishpatim to help him out. You think they needed halacha guidance on this one? What is the poet doing? He's trying to resolve a theological question. The same question that the Gemara Masechet Yevamot. Why did it fail? Why did they execute Rabbi Akiva and his Chaverim? It was all because of the Merit Bar Kokhba. That's why. Why did it fail? You want to know why it failed? Open up Chumash Bereishis to Parshat Vayeshev and you'll see why it failed. Go back to the first scene of the crime. The scene of the first crime of Sinat Achim. And you'll begin to understand it. That's what the poet is saying. Take it back to there. So he creates, in a literary sense, a story that obviously never happened. Nobody ever had intention to even think that it happened like that. Because there happened to be different versions of the Asara Rogei Malchut, like Arzei Avanon, that this little story is not even there. Because that's not important to the fact that they assassinated, they executed Rabbi Akiva and his Chaverim. But the poet thought it was important for us to know his opinion as to why the Bar Kokhba revolution fell. So, yichvot chavercha. So what does it mean, shelo nagu kavod lezu lezu? They did not respect each other. I'll give you a good example. I'll give you a very good example. From the vantage point of somebody who's serving as a shul rabbi for 32 years, not in one location. My brother, Kadosh Baruch Hu sent him for Shlema, has an advantage of being in one rabbinate from the first time that he started, if this is a proper Hebrew word, rabbinating, in Teaneck, New Jersey, in the shul called Rinat Yisrael, And he's been there, and he's the senior practicing rabbi of Teaneck. Nobody's been there. It's almost 40 years, right? It's more than 35 years for sure. For sure. And I know some shul rabbis who rabbinated for 50 years. I have a few who survived with their balabatim. I remember when I was in doing my overseas Zurich, back and forth. I'm sure you can just get a headache thinking about the 50 times I flew there in four years. But lo mishaneh, I was rabbinating by remote control from Yerushalayim. So I remember during that tenure, I was a guest speaker by my brother in Teaneck. So he gets up and he tells his balabatim, he says, my brother has the best rabbinate in the world. He doesn't have to look at his balabatim for a month. But he had enough good rapport with them that they took it, you know, in stride. Yeah, it's a nice thing to say to your balabatim, right? You have to look at them for a month. Yeah. So in the rabbinate, you have different types of balabatim. And not just, you know, nice guys and not so nice guys, or, you know, big donors and not such big donors, or people who come to shurim and not come to shurim. All of that you have, for sure. But you can also be blessed with some balabatim who happen to have smicha, who happen to be talmid chachamim. And that is most probably one of the hardest challenges for a rav. Why? You might think that's really terrific. Which means here, before you even start, you already have a core of people going to come to all your shiurim, and they're going to be the ones who are going to excite other people to join the shiurim. More often than not, those are the people who will never show up at a shiur, and perhaps even worse. Bad enough you call for a shiur on a Tuesday night, and somebody who's a ben Torah in shul doesn't even bother coming even once, or on a Shabbos afternoon. Or the worst is when the guy comes from Mincha on Shabbat and then walks out as the rabbi ascends the podium, or even worse, on Shabbat morning before Musaf, the guy, you know, takes a little bit of a breather outside during the drasha because he has nothing to learn from this rabbi. And you don't think balabatim don't see this? Of course they see it. It's a busha v'cherpa. It's a statement, basically. What is he going to teach me? You know, I sat in Kailua for 20 years. No, he's a YU rabbi. What does he know? I'm telling you, there are people who have that attitude. Because of that, the Bar Kokhba revolution collapsed. Lo nagu kavotism. There's a word in Hebrew which comes from Yiddish. Firgun. You remember the word? Farginin? Farginin. We say in Yiddish. Firgun. You know, the guy gave a Dvar Torah. It was kacha kacha. You know kacha kacha? So-so, right? You go over to him and say, that was wonderful. Now sometimes you got to be careful, because if it was really kacha kacha and you tell him it's wonderful, he wants to do it next week again. Okay, so you have to know how far you go with the firgun. But at least to give him a pat on the back and say, it was nice, and, you know, thank you, shkoyach, whatever you say, firgun. You might have done it 1,000 times better, but that's irrelevant. Yehi chvod chavircha chaviv alecha kishelach. The way you want to be thought of, the way you want people to relate to, the way you come down from the podium after a Dvar Torah, that's the way you should react to the other one. That's what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. It's no small message, by the way. And it takes a tremendous amount of personality who understands that you have to express, this is real humility. This is humility. You know, there are some shul rabbis who never in a million years would have a guest speaker in their shul. It shows insecurity because they're nervous. They're the official shul rabbi. Hey, bring in some hot shot, you know, big crackerjack number. And all of a sudden, next week is the rabbi. I'm very proud to say that I couldn't care less. You want to bring in a guest speaker, bring as much as you want, you know. And I know rabbis who are very happy to have guest speakers, because for them it's a week off. They don't have to prepare. They love it. But also, it's not just that it's a week off. It's that they feel, that they honestly feel they can learn something from somebody from the outside. And they think it's important for their congregants to hear a different opinion or a different take on a subject. Or to be expand the horizons in an area that the rabbi himself does not have expertise. It's a wonderful thing. It's an absolutely wonderful thing. Yichvot chavercha chaviv alecha Mishalach. So let me just finish this Mishnah here before we, and then it says, one second. Ve'al tihi noach lichos. Don't you should have a low boiling point when it comes to anger. Ve'shuv yom echad lifnei mitratcha, and you should do tshuva one day before you die. Wow! Here the Gemara goes to town. The Gemara goes to town. Excuse me, can anybody cue me in as to when exactly that's going to happen, so that I'll know to put it in my Palm Pilot, you know, day before, do tshuva, right? So the response to that question, which is an obvious question, is because we don't know, so you might as well do tshuva every day. That's not so simple. That's not so simple. In Dafkan, Yom Zikaron L'Chalalei Tzahal. So last night in Shul, I spoke about a chavruta of mine, Israeli chavruta of mine from the Gush, 1972-73, who was one of the first to fall in the Yom Kippur War. He was 19 years old. Ben Igal, Hashem Yikom Damo. And you refer to the Mishnah in Perkei Avot, Hayom Katzar, Bamelacha Merubah, the day is short. Just that, short. When you talk about 5,000 years, so, 70 years is short. Yimei Shinotecha Vahem Shivim Shana, Vim Begvurot Shmonim Shana. And David HaMelech didn't even go beyond that. But there's Tishim Shana, there's Mea Shana, Ad Mea Vesrim, Beseda. They say that if a person already gets to 120 and they make a big birthday party, so what do you wish the person that day? Have a nice day. Terrible, right? Terrible. But in the span of world history, so our lives are katzar. But when somebody's 19 years old, that's katzar, according to everybody's cheshbon, reckoning. No question about that. V'amlacham merubah. And sometimes we're amazed of how much a person accomplished at age 19, or age 29, or age 39. People have awesome records of accomplishment in the younger years. And v'shuv yom echad lefnei mitatcha means, don't fool around and have a good time thinking that when I get old I'll be more serious and I'll take care of my theological issues between me and God. You just don't know. It's a very sobering thought on Yom HaZikaron. Because you might say, all right, I'm not a chayal. So yesterday morning, my mother took ill, but she'll be okay. But she was in Shaar Tzedek, in the emergency room for a short while yesterday in the morning. So there was a pigua in Talpiot, right? By the Tayelet. By the Tayelet, Mizrach Talpiot. So two women were stabbed. And where were they brought? Shaar Tzedek. Here I'm sitting in the emergency room watching all this unfold. How the trauma room, gets into motion when they get the call that the ambulances are coming, and then of course then the police and this, and then the hospital director general, a whole geschäft, and then you can't complain. How come they're not taking care of you? there's a real serious issue on the table, literally and figuratively, and that's you don't know how old you're going to be or how young you're going to be, and Rahmanul litzlan, something can happen. Pulot eva, you don't know. You don't know. And I'll just conclude this little section here with a thought that the Rav said about the bracha hashkivenu that we say for Mayriv. Hashkivenu Hashem Elokeinu. It's an add-on to the bracha of Gaal Yisrael, of Emunah Kozot, that we say on Mayriv. And we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu, v'aser Satan milfaneinu me'achoreinu. We ask Kadosh Baruch Hu to the Satan, whatever the Satan means, some type of distraction in front of us, behind us. The Rav said the Satan are those dangers that lurk, that await us. The all kinds of obstacle courses that are there in life. There are two types. Those that are milfaneinu, that we can see them coming. Like an oncoming storm. You have a prediction. You know the hurricane's coming. You know there's a possibility that a tornado may touch down. You know that maybe, this or that. Like in the days of Yosef in Mitzrayim. Paro was foretold, there's going to be a famine. So if the Satan is milfaneinu, you can take steps. You can take steps to thwart off as much as possible the dangers. Maybe you're not going to overcome it completely, but at least you will reduce the damage by taking steps. If there's a plague developing, you can inoculate. You can reduce the impact of the plague. Doesn't mean you're going to wipe it out, but you can take steps. You can take economic measures. Just like Stanley Fisher, I think the man has a place in Gan Eden. The whole world had an economic crunch and collapse a few years ago. But you're not Israel. Hardly felt the pinch. I mean, how's that? Hardly any unemployment. Hardly any inflation. During this period that the world was crying. Western Europe, United States, Canada, crying. We knew people, you know, the other side of the ocean. And they were talking Aliyah. They were talking Aliyah. You know, and I remember when we came in Aliyah, the first thing you did when you were able to get your hands on some dollars, you know, you traded in your lira, you traded in your old shekel, you traded in your new shekel, whatever you wanted to trade, you traded in your monopoly money to get some dollars. Dollars, dollars. First thing I do is I trade my dollars at the shekelim. It's a better currency. It's a miracle. Read today's editorial in Jerusalem Post. Today's editorial. You can kiss every word. So they write that, you know, the religious say it's a miracle. If you're not so religious, at least you have to admit it's amazing. So they say, look, we're not oblivious to the issues. Well, of course we have issues. We have housing issues. We have issues. Blah, 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 issues. Our issues are, for Heimpers Morgan, we have issues. But stop for a second and just take a look at what we have. There's a reason why 84% of Israelis express happiness of being Israelis. You know what that means? We have 16% of people who are a little cuckoo. That's what it means. No, the 84% Rufka, 84% not cuckoo at all. Not cuckoo at all. It's a, I know. It's an appreciation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. A Kadosh Baruch Hu. Pashut mode. Pashut with us. It's mind-boggling. So that's the Satan milfaneinu. But the Rav said, what we're really worried about is the Satan me'achareinu, where you don't see the danger. And life is just carrying on as normal, and everything is fine. And out of nowhere, an explosion. Out of nowhere, a medical assessment that the situation that you just came in for, you thought you had a bad headache, it's really a malignant tumor in the brain. And you never even gave it a minute's thought that that's what it could be. And your time is now limited. And your whole life has turned upside down. That one split second. You ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Vaser Satan Me'achareinu. You're driving, your car is fine, you're a good driver, and everything is fine. Except the guy who came from the intersection, who went through the red light, and could have killed you, and maybe wounded you. Forget about the fact that he totaled your car. The Vaser Satan Me'achareinu is most probably more important than Vaser Satan Milfaneinu. Of course we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu Milfaneinu too. But more important is where you don't see the danger. Vaser Satan Milfaneinu U'Me'achareinu. And that's a tefillah. That's a tefillah of Ma'ariv, of Hashkivenu. It's extremely, extremely important. And that's why we say, V'shuv Yom Etcha Lefnei Mitatcha. It's not to, you know, create a society of depressants. It's bad enough we have our own depressions for legitimate reasons, right? But it puts people's lives into perspective. Where if you know a person goes through a near miss, and Baruch Hashem comes out of it, everything else becomes small. Everything shrinks up and shrivels up. What you thought was a big issue yesterday now becomes nearly nonsense. And really, that's what Chazal were trying to teach us. To put a proper perspective on life. And Yom HaZikaron L'Chalei Tzal U'Pigui Eiva gives all of us an opportunity to put a perspective on life. We could use these pages next week, but I just want to say a few things about the Dibrot Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. The Aseret Dibrot come in two portions. Kadosh Baruch Hu could have given it all on one even, one stone, but opted to give it on two stones. So we have a separation between the first five and the next five. And the first five are items that relate to relationships between man and God, ben adam lamakom. And the second five are social, between man and man, ben adam lachaveiro. We're going to have to deal with, we're not going to do this now, kibud horim, kibud kabinet avira v'temecha. Horim, parents, are also human beings, so it seems that kibud horim is a social issue, but yet it's on the right side of the luchot, it's on the ben adam lamakom, that's a shir in itself, we'll get to. And but we have here our classic social breakdowns, lo tirtzach against murder, lo tinaf against adultery, breakdown of family, lo tignov, theft, lo taneh bereacha, et shaker, breakdown of the judicial system, because the judicial system is based on the integrity of witnesses. And then the last one, lo tachmod eshet reacha ve'avdo ve'amato ve'shoho v'chamoro v'chol asher l'reacha. That not to, the word is usually used is coveted, which means a certain type of jealousy that someone else has and I don't have. In its variation on the left side, where it says Dvarim Perakei, which second version of Sarat HaDibrot, which says Pasuk Yutchet, there this last Diber, the tenth commandment, is split between Lo Tachmod Eshet Reyecha and Lo Titaveh Beit Reyecha, Sadehu, Va'avdo, Va'amato, V'sharo, V'chamoro, V'chol Asher Reyecha, any of the belongings, and so on, Lo Titaveh. The word Ta'ava and Chet Mem Dalet Chemed, they seem to be first cousins. So it's almost like Geshem and Matar. So why in the first Dibrot does it say Lo Tachmod twice, and the second Dibrot it says Lo Tachmod and Lo Titaveh? So this we're going to deal with next week, the difference, the halachic difference, but I know you're going to lose sleep, so I'm just going to give you, you know, one liner. Lo Titaveh is simply a thought. You walk past a person's gorgeous villa, and there's nothing wrong with appreciating the beauty of a nice house, of architecture. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. The problem starts when in your heart you say, it's a shame it's not my house, but it's his house. You did nothing about it, and you just kept walking, and it was a fleeting thought that, what a shame that it's, you know, Mr. X, and it's not my house. That's an Avera. That's an Avera. I hate to break this to you. Wow. I just saw a jaguar. When I was just a few days ago in Florida for half a day. I was in San Diego for Shabbat. And so my son pointed out to me, he was backing up from a parking lot in a pizza shop. I said, I better be careful. He tells me, I better be careful. The guy behind me is a jaguar. I said, yeah, you better be careful. But I tell you one thing, if you hit him, he's going to have some money. He'll have enough money to pay for the repair. You may not, but he will, for sure. So, Sada, do I think for a second that I don't have a jaguar? Who cares I don't have a jaguar? Mamish. I mean, you know what the upkeep of a jaguar is? It costs me a fortune to keep up a jaguar. Right.
So
Lo Tachmod means, it's more obvious, which means, Lo Tachmod on one foot means that you really wanted the guy's jaguar, so you go over and you make him a bid. Are you selling the jaguar? No, I'm not selling the jaguar. No, but you know, I'll give you a good price for the jaguar. I'm not selling the jaguar. How much is it worth? It's worth $250,000. Maybe $500,000. Whatever it costs. The guy gives him a price, he offers a price that's even beyond the book value. The guy says, you know what, I was thinking of trading it anyway. Fine, okay, yeah, give me the money, here's your keys. You can have the jaguar. Notice, but what happened here was, you didn't steal it, and it was a lot more than a fleeting thought. You took steps, concrete steps, get your hold of the grand jaguar. But why did you want the jaguar? Because you want this car. It shows how much you wanted this car. You couldn't handle it, that it's by somebody else. You're willing to shell out a lot of money, that it should be yours. That's Lo Tachmod. That's Lo Tachmo. Right. You're selling the house, right? No, I'm not selling the house. Ah, you want to sell the house. It's a good idea, sell the house. Now's a good time to sell the house. I'll give you a good price for the house. And you drive a guy meshuga that the only reason he's selling the house, because you're such a nudnik, that the only way he can get you off the back is by selling you the house. These things can happen. That's Lo Tachmod.
So what's in between Tava and Chamod is like...
No, there's nothing in between.
I wish it was mine, but I don't want to buy it from him.
Right, you're not going to do anything about it. You just walk away from the situation. It's just a fleeting thought of jealousy that he has it and I don't have it. That's an Avera. That's Lo Titaveh.
Tachmod,
right. Tachmod is always the next step. The Rambam does, he builds a pyramid here. The bottom floor is Lo Titaveh. The next floor is Lo Tachmod. You did something about it and got your hands on it legitimately. What's the last step? The guy doesn't want to sell you the jaguar. So at night, you go and borrow it permanently. You steal it. So that's lo tignov. So what you have in the Aseret HaDibrot is a type of upscaling of getting worse and worse and worse. Lo titaveh, lo tachmod, and then lo tignov. But if it was the wife who you're looking at, boy, it's a shame. He's married to this woman. She should really be my woman. So there's lo tataveh and lo tachmod on that too. Eshet re'echa. And what's the moment of the clincher? Lo tin'af. It can lead to an adulterous relationship. And what if the guy doesn't want to sell it and you think you can't steal it? You might actually murder for it. This can lead. It starts in the bottom and it builds up to lo tirtzach. And we're going to deal with this a little bit more intensively next week. But one last word about lo tirtzach. The difference between the first set of the Dibrot, the Aseret HaDibrot carry with it two sets of trop. I think I mentioned this last week. The upper and the lower casing. In the upper casing, what we read on Shavuot for sure, but some people read it even for Yitro and for Vetranan, the Dibrot are divided as commandments. So it says, Lo Tirtzach. That's the whole Pasuk, two words. If we divide it as Psukim, then it's Merchat Tibcha Munachat Nachta. Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tin'af. They go together. So what's the difference? The difference is, if you read it, Lo Tirtzach, Lo Tin'af, then the word Lo clearly connects to the word Tirtzach. Do not kill. But if you read it in the Tam Elyon, in the upper casing, it's Tibcha Sof Pasuk. Lo Tirtzach. It's almost, there's a pause after the word Lo, indicating Lo, but sometimes Tirtzach. There are certain areas in Halakha where the taking of life is not only permissible, but sometimes in the context of a mitzvah. And one of the examples is Milchemet Mitzvah, in a case of a war that is designed as a mitzvah. And the Rambam says, national self-defense, Ezrat Yisrael Miyad Tzar Sheba Aleihem, is defined as a Milchemet Mitzvah. And this led to a big question between the Rav and Rav Avad Yosef. The halacha is that a Kohen who causes the death of an individual, no matter what the circumstance, is disqualified from going up for Birkat Kohanim for the rest of his life. But what about a Chayal Tzahal who killed the enemy in the line of duty? So Rav Avad Yosef said that this is not Retzach. Only if it was homicide or murder on any level, then he's disqualified. But if it's in the line of halachic duty, then he's still kosher for duchening. The Rav decided that has nothing to do with whether it's retzach or not. It has to do with spilling blood, no matter what the circumstance. And he related it to David HaMelech's disqualification of being able to build the Beit HaMikdash. Yadav megoalot bedam. Your hands were soiled with blood. Somebody else has to do it. Somebody else. And we had this in our family, my wife's family, a cousin's son, who was an officer in the Second Lebanese War. And they went into a local village's house, be careful, because sometimes the Palestinian terrorists were hiding. And as it was, he and his friend were in their house, and a terrorist jumped out from nowhere and threw a grenade at them. And he picked up the grenade, and he threw it back at the terrorist, and he killed the terrorist, and the two of the boys were saved. Some of you know the cousin of my wife who I'm talking about. His name is Howie Kahn, and his son, and they're Kohanim. And the issue came afterwards, is he allowed to duchen? And I told this Howie Kahn, don't ask me the shayla. I don't want to be the one to say that he can't duchen, because I really think he can duchen. I just don't want to say a psak against the Rav. But I believe he can duchen under those circumstances. But he is a little bit of a comedian, this Howie Kahn, and he said, it was nothing. We always taught our kids, what doesn't belong to you, give it back right away. I said, in Yiddish we say, yene gelechtekeit, because we were about 2 seconds away from a family levaya. That's right. And he got a tzalash. He got a citation. That was an act of bravery for sure in the war. That Chazli Hashem. Should have a Chag Sameach. There's a davening here, by the way, I'm sure many of you know, the 8 o'clock tomorrow, but it's a long davening, I can tell you. Also, inadvertently, I know some of you come to my Sunday night English here at Ol Nechama. This coming Sunday night, I do have my English here, but there was an oversight, and they didn't realize that they published this week's edition early because of Yom HaTzmaut, so the announcement is not in the Torah Tidbits, but at 8 o'clock, whoever comes is cordially invited to the Ol Nechama for the this coming Sunday night. Yeah. Shabbat Chag Sameach to all of you. 8 o'clock.
I have a funny question for you.
You can leave the pages on the table. I'll bring them next week. Thank you.